Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
I love the word all. I love the word all. It's just a great word. Like right now, if I said, hey guys, I'm going to draw a name from a hat, and one of you is going to receive $1,000, you'd be like, wow, this is going to be really cool for one of us. I just hope it's me. But if I said, I am going to give $1,000 to all of you, that's right, I'm going to be your personal Oprah today. I'm going to give you each $1,000. You'd be like, this is cool for all of us. See, all is just a great word. When I was a kid, there were quite a few times where my teacher said, or there was an announcement over the loudspeaker, will Vince Antonucci please report to the principal's office? Sinking feeling. But if the announcement was, will all the students report to the principal's office, I'm okay with that. That's fine. There's some expressions, like there's an expression, all for one and one for all. That's great. If it was all for some and some for all, eh. I lived in Virginia Beach for 12 years before moving here to Vegas, and people there say y'all, right? Like they'll say, y'all come back, which is good. If it was you some come back, not so good, right? Because I don't know, am I one of the some? Like I want to come back. Is that me? I don't know if I'm one of the some. I only know if it's all. I'm all, right? No, on the original Christmas morning, God sent angels to a group of dirty, smelly shepherds to give the birth announcement of his son. It was unbelievable. I mean, what a group of people to receive this royal birth announcement. And the angels said in Luke chapter 2, verse 10, they say to the shepherds, do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will be great joy, that will cause great joy for all the people, for all the people. And I want to talk to you today about that little three-letter word, all. That little three-letter word, all. It was good news. It was great joy for all the people. It's a very small word, but it's incredibly important. And God takes this word, all, very seriously. And we need to take it seriously as well. The word all is at kind of the center of one of Jesus' most famous stories. You've probably heard it or at least are familiar with the title character. It's very familiar to most people, but over the years, it's completely lost its meaning. It's lost its sting. And so I want to take a look at this story with you. And again, you may have heard it, but I want you to think through what it meant to Jesus' audience that day, to the original people who heard the story, and then, therefore, what does it mean for us today? So we're going to look at Luke chapter 10, and we'll put it on the screen. If you have a Bible with you, you can turn there. If you don't, we'll put the verse on the screen. If you don't own a Bible, we give them out for free at the Velcro bar, so you can stop by there and grab one today. Velcro bars are a connecting place. If you have questions, want to get connected, you can stop there. So Luke chapter 10, starting in verse 25. Says this, on one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What is written in the law? He replied, how do you read it? He, this expert in the law, answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. You have answered correctly, Jesus replied, do this and you will live. But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? So this expert in the law starts talking about loving God and loving people, and Jesus smiles and he says, that is a good answer. Good answer. But this expert, he wants to justify himself, and so he asks this question, so who exactly is my neighbor? Who is this group of people? Who is included in this group of people that God wants me to love? And in response, we're going to see that Jesus tells him a story. And the story has a certain structure to it. It's a story that follows what's commonly called the rule of three. The rule of three. We have stories like this today. In Jesus' time, there were a lot of stories that followed the structure of the rule of three. three. And so what would happen in this kind of story is that one person, character one, would do something, and then a second person, character two, would do the same thing. Now the expectation is set, but then along comes character three, who does not follow this pattern, does something completely different. All right? And so let's look at this story that Jesus tells, starting in verse 30. In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side." We'll pause there. Now, Jesus' audience would have been able to immediately picture this scene. There was a 17-mile road from Jerusalem to Jericho, and it was notoriously dangerous. Just lots of places for kind of bad guys to hang out and to ambush somebody coming by. The road is still there today. And so this man is going down the road, and these bad guys do. They jump out, they ambush him, they beat him up, they steal everything from him, and they leave. And so a little while later, a priest comes by, and the priest is man number one, character one in this story, okay? The structure begins. And he's coming down the road. He was probably, we can guess, riding a donkey, because priests back then were actually paid quite well. They had some money, and so he probably wouldn't be walking the 17 miles on foot, probably riding a donkey, his SUD, sports utility donkey. Yeah. It's not that funny. You don't have to laugh. This road, again, it's still around today. You could go walk down this 17-mile road today. It's very narrow. In fact, there are points on this road where it's so narrow that if a group of people is walking it, they have to walk single file. It's more, picture more like a sidewalk than a road. Okay? So this priest comes riding probably along on his donkey, and it's not like he's on the 15. You know, and the guy who's been beaten up is way over there, and he's way over here, and he can't even, doesn't even notice the guy over there. It's not like that. I mean, this is a very narrow road. He probably pretty much had to have his donkey, like, step over the guy to avoid him, and that's exactly what he does. So why doesn't the priest help the guy? Why doesn't he help him? We don't know, but one possibility is pretty obvious. It's a dangerous place. Look what happened to this guy laying on the road. There's no police. There's no 911 calls. And so maybe, giving him the benefit of the doubt, maybe he's thinking, man, if I stop and help him, who knows what's going to happen to me? It'd be pretty risky to stop. Maybe. Another possibility, and more likely, is he's a priest. He's a priest, and so he serves at the temple, which is like their church. He handles the tithes, he makes the offerings, he leads the worship, and to do all those things back then, you had to have a kind of ritualistic purity. It was what was called being clean back then. To serve in the temple, you had to be clean, and they had rules about what made you clean and what made you not clean. The first rule in the written law, they had a written law, the first rule of what would make you impure if you were a priest was contact with a corpse. The first rule in the oral law, they also had an oral law, as to what would make you unclean as a priest to serve in the temple was contact with a Gentile, with a non-Jew. So this priest comes down the road, probably on his donkey, and he sees this guy laying there who Jesus says was half dead. Now, this was actually a technical term back then. Back in the day of Jesus, one of the things that rabbis did, one of their duties, was that they would come in and they would identify the stages of death, which I'm really glad that it's no longer like the rabbis or priests or pastors who do this, because like I would walk in the room and I'd be like, yeah, he's dead. And they'd be like, no, that guy's asleep. We're talking about this guy. And I'd be like, they're all dead. And it wouldn't be good. So I'm glad that's not, you know, there's doctors now and such. But they would identify. And this phrase that Jesus used, that he was half dead, that was actually one of the technical terms for how dead a person was. And it referred to somebody who was like in the last phases before death. Have you ever seen the movie The Princess Bride? Ever seen that movie? Remember, there's one point where the hero, Wesley, is thought to be dead, and he's brought to Miracle Max, and Miracle Max looks at him, and he says, oh, he's not all dead. He's mostly dead, but that means he's a little alive, right? Well, that's kind of this guy on the road. He's mostly dead, right? Maybe a little alive. But perhaps the priest sees him. He doesn't know how close to death he is, and he knows first rule in the written code is if I touch a corpse, I'm unclean, maybe. Also, he didn't know if this guy was a Jew or a Gentile, okay? One way you could tell back then was by the clothing a person wore. Jews and Gentiles wore different kinds of clothing. That's why Jesus says not just that they robbed the man, but they stripped him of his clothes. It's a brilliantly told story that Jesus is weaving here. Because he makes it so that this priest cannot tell, is this a Jew or a Gentile? Is he one of us or is he one of them? Is he an insider or is he an outsider? The priest just can't know because he doesn't have any clothes on. All he can know is that this is a human being in deep need of some compassion. But even still, the priest does nothing. Rides up on his donkey, sees the man, goes on the other side, passes by. Then it comes along the next guy who is a Levite. That's the next verse, verse 32. It says, so too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. Now, the Levites assisted the priests in their service at the temple. And so he comes down the road, and the Levites weren't paid so much, so he probably was on foot. And he sees this man, and now he doesn't have a donkey, so he can't put the man on the donkey and take him to safety, but he could do something. He could have stopped, could have noticed, he could have said something, he could have given a little first aid, maybe stopped the bleeding, but he doesn't. He does nothing. And he is the second character in this story, right? And so now the expectation is set. And as I said, there were a lot of these three character stories back in Jesus' time. And very often, the same basic three characters would appear in each of the stories. The first character would almost always be a priest. The second character would almost always be a Levite. And it was always the first and second character, the priest and the Levite, who did the wrong thing. Or did the dumb thing. They would come along, they'd be dumb and dumber, right? And people love that. They love these stories because the priests and the Levites were not very popular. And so those stories were just beloved stories because, the priest is an idiot and the Levite's an idiot. And then along comes the third character. And the third character in these stories very often, commonly, was an ordinary Jew. Just an average, ordinary Jewish Israelite guy. And people love that because he would be the hero of the story. The first two do the same thing. Third character does something different. He's the hero of the story, and it was always this ordinary Jewish man. And we love that because we're ordinary Jewish people, and he is one of us. You know, we like that. So Jesus starts telling the story, right? And the crowd is now looking forward to this because the expectations, oh, it's one of these stories. We love these. First guy comes, priest, does the wrong thing. Yep. Second guy comes, Levite, does the wrong thing. Yep. And everyone's like, here it comes. He's going to make the hero of the story, an ordinary Jew, and we're going to love this. And then Jesus says, we're going to see it in a second, he says, and then along came a Samaritan. And when Jesus said the word Samaritan, he said a dirty word. He had just said a really, really bad word. Because the Samaritans were the mortal enemies of the Israelites. The Israelites despised the Samaritans. They called them dogs. They hated them. They always had. And it was even a little more heated during Jesus' time because recently, during that day, the Samaritans had defiled the temple by taking rotting bones of human beings and throwing them into the temple courts. They were despised. There was nothing to a Jewish person, to this crowd of people listening to Jesus, than being a Samaritan or being with a Samaritan or tolerating Samaritans. And Jesus makes the hero of his story a Samaritan. We know this story by the title, The Good Samaritan, right? We still use it today, right? If you heard about some guy who helped an old lady across the street, we would say, oh man, that guy was really being a good Samaritan, right? But back then, no one would say that. No one would put the words together, good Samaritan. There was no such thing. Samaritans were dogs. They were despised people. And when Jesus said, then a Samaritan came along, he offended every single person. I hope you understand the unbelievable courage of Jesus in this moment. Okay? And it gets worse because he doesn't just mention a Samaritan. He makes the Samaritan the hero of the story. Remember, so we got this pattern, right? Typical pattern. First guy comes, does nothing. Second guy comes, does nothing. Expectations set, right? Now the third guy should do nothing, but we're expecting something different is going to happen. And let's check out what actually happens, starting in verse 33. It says, But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was. And when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own SUD, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii money and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I'll reimburse you for any extra expenses you may have. The Samaritan comes, and he does, and he does, and he does, and he does. Jesus mentions 7 different things that he does to take care of this man laying on the side of the road. It's unbelievable. A Samaritan comes in compassion, and he does, and does, and does, and does. Jesus ticks off everyone. I mean, this is a bad moment right here, okay? And then Jesus turns to the expert in the law. Remember how this whole story was inspired, was instigated, right? Because the expert in the law said, hey, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Jesus says, the guy says, I think it's love God and love people, but who do I have to love? Jesus tells this story. And so check this out. He turns to this guy, and here's what he says in verse 36 and then 37. Jesus turns to him and says, which of these 3 do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Jesus told him, go and do likewise. Now, did you notice that this expert in the law can't even get himself to say the word Samaritan? He didn't say the Samaritan. He says the one who had mercy on him. Right? He won't even utter such a disgusting word. But the Samaritan is the answer to the question. Right? He won't say the word. But Jesus says that the person you, and this is the point of the story, the person you hate the most, the person who it's easiest to ignore, the person you care about the least, that's your neighbor. And that was what was so explosive about this story. We think of this as being a story of like, oh, do good, right? And the moral of the story is, be nice, help the old lady, be a good Samaritan. But that is not what this story is about. This was an unbelievably courageous story to this group of people, okay? And it's made even more obvious how challenging and how courageous Jesus is when he says, now you, he ends by saying, you go and do likewise. You be like that Samaritan. And really, the challenge of the story is this little 3-letter word, all. All. It's good news of great joy for all people. We are to love all people. We are to serve all people, right? The point of the story is that you cannot justify your lack of love for anyone. You can't justify your lack of compassion for anyone. You can't justify not serving anyone. But it's so easy, isn't it? It is so easy. It's so easy to justify doing nothing, just ignoring people who have been beaten up and left on the side of the road. I mean, children who are starving, kids orphaned by AIDS, people who live out in the streets. It's just so easy to close your eyes and to justify, to say, but they don't look like me. You know, I didn't realize that it was my responsibility. I thought someone else would take care of it. I didn't think they were my neighbors. But no, this Jesus who at his birth, God said, came to bring good news of great joy for all people. He says that we are to stop and serve all. In fact, he ends the story by saying, go and do likewise. And that's our challenge. And that's our privilege, right? That's our privilege because check this out. Think about this. You and I, we get to be the good news of great joy to all people. Your life gets to be good news of great joy for all people. And so what we need to do is we need to go through life with our eyes open, looking for people on the side of the road who have been just left there, who we can stop and serve. But it is so easy to close our eyes to them. There's a guy named Richard Stearns. Richard Stearns was a young graduate student in college when he made the decision to give his life to Jesus. And it happened mostly through the influence of a girl who was a friend of his, kind of girlfriend. When he gave his life to Jesus, he was just all in. I mean, he just totally gave his life to Jesus. In fact, a little while later, they started a date. They got engaged. They're going to get married. And so his girlfriend wants to register for China as one of the gifts for their wedding. And Richard Stearns says to her, absolutely not. As long as there are children who are starving in this world, we will not own China, silver, but we will not own that. Well, Richard Stearns graduates from college, goes into the corporate world, starts climbing the corporate ladder, and 20 years later, he is the CEO of Lennox. You know what Lennox makes? Lennox is the number one producer in our country of fine china. Something had changed. So easy. So easy. One day, Richard Stearns gets a phone call from a group called World Mission. And they're a group that's very similar, World Vision is, to the group that we work with called Compassion International. So what they do is they help kids who are starving around the world to have something to eat, and that they work with people in poverty, kind of like Compassion International, who we work with. And so they call and they say, hey, we have an opening to be the CEO of World Vision. We need someone to come in and be the president of our organization. Would you consider taking this job? And so they say, why don't you come on a mission trip with us and see what we do? And so Richard starts to pray about it, and then he goes on this mission trip with World Vision to Rakai, Uganda, which is like ground zero for the AIDS pandemic. And one day during his trip, Richard is sitting in a little thatch hut with a 13-year-old boy. Outside the door, there's a little pile of rocks, which signify where his father, who had died of AIDS, was buried. And a few feet away is another little pile of rocks, which show where his mother, who had also died of AIDS, was buried. And this 13-year-old is now head of the household, trying to raise his younger brothers and sisters. And his name happens to be, this little boy's name happens to be Richard. And so Richard is talking to Richard, and he's asking him questions about how World Vision has been able to help them. And at one point, he says, do you have a Bible? And little Richard says, little Richard, that was funny. That came out weird. Little Richard says, ow! He says, good. I didn't know that was going to happen. Young Richard says, yes. His eyes kind of light up, and he runs in the other room and gets the only book in that little thatch hut, a Bible that he'd been given because he's a part of the Ministry of World Vision, and he brings it back, and Richard, older Richard, says, man, that's great. He says, do you know how to read? Can you read this Bible? And young Richard says, yes. And his eyes light up and he says, I love to read the Gospel of John. Because in John, we're told that Jesus loves the children. All the children of the world. So Richard goes home to America and he's praying about what to do. And he's seeking to justify himself. And so he kind of lists for God all the reasons that it would not work for him to take this role as being president of World Vision. He says, I'm not qualified for this, God, and I couldn't do it. He says, I'm not gifted for this kind of thing. I spent 20 years of my life getting to this point where I'm at, and I'd have to give it all up. I'd have to give up my Jaguar. I couldn't live in this great home I live in now. And he's telling God all these reasons. And he said, it was like God said to him, Richard, do you remember that young man who said, as long as there are starving children in this world, we will not own China? Look what you've become. Look what you've become. But Richard, if you still care about those starving children, I have a job for you. And Richard Stearns took the job. And to this day, he is the president of World Vision. And I don't know what that means for you. I don't know what God is saying to you or what you need to do. I don't. But I do know that God has given good news of great joy that is for all the people. And I do know that if you have had a point in your life where you have decided that you want to be a follower of Jesus, then you have the privilege and the responsibility of being the good news of great joy to all people. And I do know that we have some really cool opportunities here at Verve for you to be good news. This last month, we've been collecting presents for the kids at Dean Peterson Elementary. Dean Peterson is a school in a very poor and gang-infested neighborhood here in Las Vegas. The school is located on a road that's commonly called Crack Alley. And most of the kids there will not receive any Christmas present for Christmas. And so a couple years ago, we said, man, that's just not okay. And so let's try to do something about that. And so for the last couple years, we've been trying to make sure that each kid gets at least a present, at least one present for Christmas. And let's just bring some good news of great joy on Christmas to these kids. And man, I want to thank those of you who have brought presents in. We have hundreds of presents in a room near here for these kids. I want to thank you. And I want to tell you, if you are like, man, I missed my chance, tomorrow between 8:30 a.m. and 8:30 p.m., if you want to bring in a present, we'll be here. And so that's your last chance because we're doing it this week. And so if you didn't get a chance, but you want to come in tomorrow between 8:30 and 8:30, we'll still take your presents and make sure they get in the hands of a kid who needs it. Here's another cool opportunity. So last year, we partnered with a couple other churches and we built a building in an absolutely poverty-stricken town called Rocco Fuerte in Ecuador. And so we built this building and we started a church that now meets every Sunday in that building. It's the only church in that town. And there are now a couple hundred people who attend there. And then Monday through Saturday in this building, we partnered with Compassion International. And so there are feeding programs. So kids are getting fed 6 days a week. You might say, only 6 days a week? At least they're getting fed 6 days a week. This is like incredible for these kids. And they're receiving a much better education than any chance they would have had before we came in and put these programs in place. And the way a kid can go through this program is if someone in America sponsors them. Someone in America sends $38 a month, and these kids get food 6 days a week. They get an education. They get medical care, all kinds of stuff. And about 70, I think it is, people here at Verve are sponsoring kids who are going through this program now. And today at the Velcro Bar, we have the names of 20 more kids, the faces, the pictures of 20 more kids who need to be sponsored. And so maybe you could be good news to a child in Ecuador. And if you would like to do that, you can stop by the Velcro Bar and on the computer they can show you these kids and you can choose the kid that you want to sponsor. Next year, we're doing 3 mission trips. One is to Poland in late March, and then we're going to do a weekend trip to Mexico, which doesn't sound like a mission trip, does it? It sounds like something's wrong with that idea. But we're doing another trip to Ecuador in early June, and we're going to go. We're going to serve, and you would get to meet the kid that you sponsor if you do sponsor one, and maybe that trip is an opportunity for you to be good news of great joy. We took a trip to Ecuador back in August, and I thought it might be cool for you to hear from a couple people who went on that trip, and just to learn about how you could be good news and how you could bring great joy to people living in this town in Ecuador. And so I'm going to bring up Jake and Jessica just for you to hear a little bit from, but while they're coming up, we're going to see a few images from their trip. I just want to ask you a couple questions. So first, what would you say going on this trip was one of the most powerful moments or powerful experiences of the trip for you? We'll start with Jessica.
I would say that it was hands down the unconditional love of the Ecuadorian people. We pulled up to attend service at the church that you helped build and to meet the children that are attending this church and this school 6 days a week. And we were greeted as members of their family we're a mishmash group of Americans that are showing up to do who knows what. If you know anything about the heritage of South American people, Latin American people, basically, family's a big deal. And that is the little girl that I sponsor. Her name is Soraya. If you sponsor a child, they refer to you as either madrina or padrino. And that means godmother or godfather. So they welcome you wholeheartedly as their family.
That's cool. Yeah. Some of you are godmothers and godfathers to some kids, and that's awesome. What about you, Jake?
Probably for me, you know, going there, they try to prepare you and tell you, you know, there's poverty and it's kind of everywhere you look and it's all around, and you know that, and you're kind of prepared for it, but you really can't be prepared for it. I mean, even the worst here in Vegas is pretty good down there. And so when you get there, it's depressing, and it's kind of like, oh, wow, like how will this ever change? Like, how will anything ever get better? And so one night we were having dinner, and we had dinner with these 3 people. They're students at the university in the town that we were staying in. And each of these kids were part of the Compassion program that Compassion International does. And they are now in university. And the guy on the left, he's studying to be a system analyst. The lady in the middle is going to be a doctor. And the dude on the right is going into hotel management. He wants to start a chain of hotels. So we told him he needed to come to UNLV. But what was cool was that each of those kids came from nothing. I mean, each of them, they came from one of the little towns that's out in the whatever with nothing. But because of Compassion International, because someone sponsored them, because someone believed in them, they've now gone on, and now they're studying, and they're in this leadership program, and they are going to take on jobs that then create other jobs for the community. And having dinner with them, it's like, oh, there's hope. Like, there is hope, because people care, things can change. And it's not going to be fast. It's not going to be just somebody, you know, dumping a bunch of money on it and saying, oh, now it's better. Right. It's going to change because they're empowering them to actually make a difference.
That's awesome. We have one of our we say our mission here at Verve is love God, love people, turn the world upside down. Turn the world upside down probably sounds a little silly. Like, yeah, we're really going to turn the world upside down. But you hear a story like that and you realize the way you turn the world upside down, it's like dominoes. You know, you hit the first domino and things happen. And so those of you who are giving $38 a month, man, I loved it when you told me about meeting your girl and she wouldn't let go of you. You know, so you have this little kid who you haven't met yet, but Ken, who loves you, but bigger than that, they have a chance to be, you know, going to college someday because of your $38 a month, changing their lives, changing the lives of other people. That's awesome. My hope is that some of you might be going, maybe I'll go. Like, I'm sure Jessica would say, it never occurred to me someday I'd go to Ecuador or even go on a mission trip. But maybe some of you are the people who need to go next year or one of the other trips. So let me just ask this. For the person out there who's thinking, maybe, what would you say to someone who's considering going on a mission trip this next year to Ecuador or wherever? What would you say?
Well, the first thing I'd say is do it. Just do it. Secondly, just pray to God to open your heart. And and use you in whatever capacity it is that he deems fit for you, because you will experience amazing and unbelievable things. Just let go. I mean, I'm the ultimate in controlling, and that was my huge, that was my prayer, is to just be able to let go. And that's what we did. I mean, we went down there and we built this huge playground with, trust me, like, no tools. We used our hands to dig holes. So God will use you in unbelievable ways. Just let him.
So you guys got to build a playground, and you get to spend time with your kids. I think you took your kids on kind of a day vacation, which, like, we might be like, big deal, day vacation. So you took them to the beach, and they got to experience the ocean.
I mean,
for the
first town,
time.
Yeah, the town that Rocco Fuerte is, I don't know how far it is from the coast. It's not very far. Maybe, maybe 30 miles, maybe.
Right.
And no one there has ever seen the ocean, because they just never leave.
Right.
They don't have any clue that it's, you know, by car, it's 30 minutes away, because most of them don't have a car. For me, what I would share with someone considering going is, first of all, you can do it. Like, it is hard work, and it is difficult, and you'll probably have to raise some money to go, but you can totally do it. I know some people who went last year, is like, I don't know. It's like, no, you can. You can totally do it, and it's amazing. The second thing that I would say is, both the people who are considering going, and maybe even you're like, nah, I'm not going to do that. Okay, but sponsor a child. It really makes a difference. It's extra cool when you go on the trip when you get to sponsor a child. That's the little girl that we sponsor, that my family sponsors. Paulina is her name, and I got to hang out with her all week, and it was amazing. Another more poignant moment for me was one of the cool things you get to do is you get to go and visit the home. If your child lives in the area, you get to visit their home and see what their home life is like. And when I went on my visit, that's when I learned that Paulina, her dad is gone. He's been out of the picture for a really long time. And for the last couple of years, her mom left too. Her mom got a new boyfriend and went up the coast somewhere. And, you know, she's 11 years old. And so she's staying with an uncle who was like 22, maybe. I mean, he's pretty young. And I see the little bed that she sleeps in at the corner of the room. And it just hits me that no one cares about her. She's not in anybody's world. You know, the uncle's trying to make a living for the 7 or 8 family members that live in the house. And it just hit me. And I broke down. And then I thought, but that's not true, because I do. Mm-hmm. I care about her. Yeah.
Can I add one thing?
Yes.
If you sponsor a child, write to your kids. It means everything in the world to them. They keep every letter you write and hold them dear, near, and close to their hearts. If you do nothing other than send $38 a month, write to your kids.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. Thanks for going. Thanks for sharing with us. And so again, we have the names of 20 kids and pictures. You can pick the kid you want to sponsor. You know, they went on that trip back in August, but whether they were thinking this way or not, what they did was all about Christmas. That trip was all about Christmas, because Christmas is all about Jesus, and it's all about Jesus' followers being good news of great joy for all the people. And Jesus made it clear, all means everyone, right? It's any person in need. It's the people who are so easy to ignore, the people who you have no reason to care about. They are your neighbor, and there's no excuses not to love. It's a conspiracy of kindness. It's a conspiracy of compassion. And so I wonder what that means for you. Let's pray. God, thank you that you call us to a better life. You know, the standard down here is just to live day by day, doing the same things, focusing on me, trying to get as much money as I can, trying to put together some fun experiences, and then someday I die. And that is not living. That is not life. God, thank you that you lay out this better life for us and you invite us into it and you offer to equip us so that we can live it with your empowerment. God, thank you for a life of compassion that you offer to us. Thank you for a life that becomes an adventure when we follow you. God, would you help us to live that life? It's so easy not to. But God, help us become a part of this conspiracy of compassion. We pray in Jesus' name.